evening sun. Tomorrow's rain will wash the stains away. Something in our mind will always stay.
Welcome to this 31st day of October edition of Head On. I'm Bob. And that's not our Halloween intro. It's just something that occurred to me when I was contemplating some very, 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 very bad news that I received this morning. And I'm going to share it with you all because... Not to do so would just be wrong. There aren't many editions of this program that go by that I don't reference something that I saw, something that I found, something that was sent me by the boys over at WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. And the boys are, of course, Clyde and Wally and Dookie. And I had a lot of contact with Clyde over the last several years. In fact, he and Wally and Dookie made contact with me fairly early on, right after we started streaming at the terrestrial radio station. Clyde got killed last night. He was in a car wreck out in Kansas City. Or in the Kansas City area, and didn't make it. And I've been thinking all day about what you say in a situation like this, and every last word of it is gone. because I find myself as speechless now as I was when I first read the news. It did cause me to start thinking about the relationships and the community that we build on the Internet, because I have never met Clyde, whose real name was Kenny Bollies. Middle name was Clyde. If you go over to WD40.com, you'll see the obit that Dookie has put up. You'll note that Kenny was 46 years old. He's just a little bit older than me. He had two brothers and a sister. And he was a working guy. He was that most special of Americans. He was an extraordinary American because he was a working man. And there's a big hole. There's just a big hole in my life right now. And it'll get, I guess it'll scar over and heal up. But I'd never met him. You know, when things like this occur to you, you think of the craziest things. And one of the things that occurred to me is that if those supercilious, pretentious horses' asses in Denver hadn't put the kibosh on our plans to be at the convention, I would have finally gotten to do something that I really wanted to do, because part of the plan was to stop in Kansas City, do the show, and hoist a mug with the boys, including Kenny. Life is not linear. Life is web form. Things touch things that touch things that vibrate on the furthest ends of the web. But I didn't get to hoist that glass. And yeah, I'm madder about it now than I was then. But I'm going to hoist a mug. I'm going to hoist it high and proud. And I'm going to take a big, long, cold swaller. And I'm going to toast you, Kenny. Because God knows we're going to miss you. Now, I did get a communication. I sent a note off to the boys. And they wrote back. And in no uncertain terms, I might add. I'm just going to share with you what Wally and Dookie said. Thank you, Bob and Agnes. Okay, Mama, Daddy, little Timmy and little Susie need to go out of the room. There's some language here. But you know what? It's okay. I ain't going to worry about it. This is a beautiful thing here. Thank you, Bob and Agnes. The fucker left a big hole in a lot of people's hearts. Pardon my language, but he'd be hurt if I called him nice names. He said, we're a mess. They said, we're a mess out here in Kansas without our brother. Beyond even knowing what to say or what to suggest for you to say about him. You might hear from us if we're sober enough to talk. One request from Kenny himself, none of this crying and lying about how wonderful of a guy he was. He was a fucking great guy, but no lying about it like people do at funerals. Make fun of him. Laugh. If there's one thing that son of a bitch could do, it's make people laugh. Oh, yeah. Tell people to get off their asses and vote. And call people. Knock doors wherever they can. Politics were his life. He put way too much effort into getting the Republicans out of power. Make it happen. That is what Kenny would want. Thanks, Bob and Agnes. I know he loved you guys, too. He never missed a show, and if he didn't like you so much, Bob, he would have stolen Agnes away from you. And I'm not kidding about that. Wally and Dookie. Oh, I know you're not kidding. I know. Agnes and I often had ongoing debates as to who got custody of Clyde if we ever did divorce. Ah, oh, Jesus. No, I'd be sitting here trying to pull a show together, and you know, I'm not going to kid you. It's not a, wow, is this one of those nights I didn't want to crawl behind the microphone. But crawl you do. And in the middle of it all, I'd get some little insane email from Kenny. That just turned the whole day on its side. And we'd sit there and email back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, giggling all the way. Always promising, by God, we'll see a football game together. And I, you know, we'd wait for the college football season to come, the college basketball season to come. Him with his Iowa Hawkeyes and me with my Mountaineers. Bantering back and forth. And I know that there are academics and medical and psychological professionals out there that say that the relationships you form are not on the internet are not real because they're not truly personal. They can all kiss my ass. That's like saying that because John Adams and Thomas Jefferson didn't live around the block from each other, that their correspondence, brilliant though it was somehow less than genuine. Or that transatlantic correspondences that took place in the age of sailing ship was somehow less valid for the fact that that the correspondents weren't next door neighbors. Bullshit. There's a lesson in all of this. And it is a lesson for me, if not for all of you. I know what I take away from it. These relationships, this family we have made here at the Horn, and that Clyde and Wally and Dookie made at WD40.com, and they will go forward, I suspect, because, well, Kenny kicked their asses if they didn't. They know that. These relationships are very real. Profoundly real. And the pain is profound. But most of all, the love is profound. The genuine sense of a mutual willingness to stand together, shoulder to shoulder, and stride forward in a determination to make things better, to start a dialogue, a discussion, a debate, that will lead to conclusions that can make us all better people is very real. And don't ever, ever, ever let anyone tell you otherwise. I couldn't help noting that on the website, Kenny's sister posted, and she said this, among other things. She said, at this point, Kenny will be buried on Election Day in our hometown. We felt it was appropriate. If Barack Obama wins, and please God make it so, he'll celebrate with Mom and Dad. If he loses, he'll be glad he's dead. And she says, her name is Linda, God bless all of you, and thank you for being our baby brother's friends. Oh, that photograph. That photograph. You can just see from the arch of the eyebrow that there was much mischief in that soul. So we're going to go on with the show. There's no other way. Let me tell you one last thing. I want to tell you about the decent heart of a working man. And in accordance with the strictures set forth by Wally and Dookie, it ain't going to be no made-up BS. I had a note, maybe a year ago, maybe a little less, from Kenny. And Kenny was a welding inspector. And he was damn good at what he did. By the way, the boys are saying, if you want to honor him, vote. Don't send flowers. But he was a welding inspector, and he was looking at some jobs, and he'd seen that there was an outfit here in West Virginia, I can't even remember the name of it, that was looking for folks in his line of work. And he wrote me a note. And he said, Bob, he said, I'm looking at maybe doing some work for this outfit. And he gave me the name of the company. And he said, before I tell them yes or no, or before I even pursue it, would you do me a favor? And, of course, you know, being Kenny, I said, hell yeah. He said, would you do some checking around and make sure that this company doesn't have a damn thing to do with mountaintop removal? He said, we all need to make a dollar, but I'm damned if I'll make one that has anything to do with destroying your home and all those people that I love and I hear about. I don't know how many times on this program I've talked about the fact that we don't recognize often how many of the choices that we make in this life are moral choices. What you do in the grocery store involves moral, ethical choices. What you do in the voting booth involves moral, ethical choices. What you do to keep the lights on and a roof over your head involves moral, ethical choices. But Kenny knew that all the way down to the bottom of his feet. And where I knew that I had a friend before I saw that email. After I saw it, I knew that I didn't just have a friend. I knew that I had a brother. And I knew that I had someone that was making those moral and ethical choices every day of his life, and that he was making it count. So although I cannot fill in all the blanks of about Kenny's life, I feel safe in guaranteeing that he put into 46 years what some people never managed to put into 100. And it sort of reminds me of, you know me, Poetry Corner. It reminds me of something that I was given as a very young man and told to memorize and told to keep with me throughout my life. And it occurs to me that Kenny must in one way or another lived his life the same way. Yeah, it's kind of a chestnut of a poem. Some might even say trite. But by God, how much truth is in this? If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Kenny, you're gone from the earth, but not from our hearts. And you were, as God is my witness, a man. So at 22 minutes past the hour, we will continue with the program, though frankly I don't know what you're going to get tonight, because I don't know how much program there is in me, to tell you the truth. But let's do continue the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
You just broke my heart.
I'm sorry, Susan. I sent you a note earlier today, you being part of the Horn family, and because of your own troubles, you haven't been able to get to the computer, so you didn't know.
Yeah. In a way, can I indulge in kind of a mini rant real quick?
Indulge.
The reason I called in today, I didn't know any of this, is I decided to do this as my part of the election. A while back, my little trouble started. I took a fall and broke my foot in 7 places. And since my computers are upstairs, that kind of puts me offline for the duration. Now, that's no big deal, and I don't say it to get anybody to feel sorry for me or anything. But I wanted to mention it because one of the things that my husband and I did, even though my foot was in a cast, and even though I was using a walker, I still had to partially put that foot on the ground with its broken bones in order to get into a car to take my vote down to put it in the county courthouse. And what that was vote.
Yeah.
And if I can do that on 7 broken bones, then the rest of you people who have not voted, get up off your butts and vote. If Kenny can die to vote, get up off your butts and vote.
And no excuses now.
And while you're at it, take some pins.
Yeah, yeah. There are no excuses. There are no excuses. We are within striking distance of change that not just Kenny, but everybody else wants, aches, yearns for, needs. And as we've seen, Susan, in the last in the last few weeks. The other side is coming apart at the seams. They're going to burst in all the bilious, vile, nasty, filthy hate that inspires and propels them is spewing all over this country. And we've got more examples of it tonight. But we vote. We can stop it. We can stop it. You may not. I had that extremely, and you probably didn't get to hear it. And in fact, I'm pretty sure you didn't get to hear it. We had that marvelous statement yesterday that I ran on the air by Diddy, P. Diddy, Puffy Combs. And frankly, it bears repeating, and it's from his video blog. I'd like for you to hear it because it's right in line with what you were saying, Susan. It's stunning.
Hey, Puff, I'm down here in Florida, and you know, some of the people are going for early voting. Some people are driving up, seeing the lines, and they saying, I can't do that, man. The line is too long. I know y'all done lost your minds, right? It may not be true, but just in case it is true, and I love Florida, so this has nothing to do with Florida.
Here it comes.
It could be anywhere in the United States where they got early voting, or even on November 4th. If you see a line and the line look like it's going out the door to the next state, you just walk down to the next state and get on the end of the line. Imagine if Martin Luther King said, oh, man, my feet hurt. I can't march today. Imagine that. Imagine the people that were sitting in the diner said, no, I'm not going to sit down. I don't want to get beat on by the angry crowds. What if the people that was marching said, I don't want to get hosed there? We be using colored bathrooms right now. Going to all colored schools, y'all know what it would be. Ain't no line too damn long.
There it is.
Get on the line and vote, man. Don't even do it for yourself. If you got to stand on the line for 48 hours, that's nothing compared to the people that have given up their lives for you to have this right, for you to have the life that you have. Even if the life ain't great, it ain't the same life it used to be. Trust me. Ain't no line too damn long.
Nope.
Nope. No line too long. And it's true. If you have to wait till November 4th and the line is a long one, Pop, get in line. Wait. I don't care if you have to wait for 16 hours. If you're in line, you will be allowed to vote. Insist on voting.
Hear, hear. Because there's no other alternative. There is no other alternative at this time, Susan.
Because the
Remember 2004, they had that campaign, Vote or Die? Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, this time it's for real.
Yeah. This time it's for real, exactly.
If John McCain has anything approaching what he, and you know, he would, they're Republican, Susan. So if they had a one vote win, they would call it a mandate. And since they're Republicans, it is a mandate to kill. A mandate to steal, a mandate to slaughter.
And you've already seen how McCain plans on going in, George Bush's actions.
Well, dear God, if Sarah Palin is the best he can do for a vice president, who in the world is going to be his Secretary of State?
Oh my God,
Pee Wee Herman? I mean,
Henry Kissinger.
Well, there you go. Yeah, find a real good old war criminal.
Yeah.
So. Stakes couldn't be any higher.
Reinstate the draft, folks. That's a real good reason for you kids to vote. Get in line.
Yeah. The young folks, God, I can't believe I'm using that phrase.
Me either.
People of a younger age, would be well to take note that it is their butt on the line. It is their fat in the fire. My generation and generations older, no offense, folks, for those who tried to stop it, but we've screwed up their world real good.
Yeah.
Now, you know, sadly, maybe they're the ones who have to save it. So, yeah.
And now the saving starts right now. Go vote. If you're lucky enough to vote early, because from what I'm hearing, November 4th is not going to be pretty. Vote early, and that way you can get your vote counted. Don't accept the provisional ballot. Vote early. Go in there and do it right.
Exactly. And you know, get there early and maybe you stand online a little bit less time. And oh God, you can't put it strongly enough, can we, Susan?
No.
No.
I wish there was some way you could have entertainments, to keep these people occupied. You can't. But for crying out loud, just try and think of what the next generation is going to have to endure if we fail.
I can't contemplate it. I can't. It's too damn much.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If McCain gets in and then drops dead the day McCain is sworn in, that's the day I throw myself on Canada's dubious protection for their religious persecution laws.
Well, I think, yeah. Yeah.
But, I don't want to leave this country, but I don't want to live here as these people do. Vote, people, vote. If I can do it on 7 broken bones, you at the very least ought to be able to get off your fat tushes and go vote. What's it going to take? And if you live in the state of Oregon, you really don't have an excuse. You vote by mail.
By mail, exactly. And what's this? But why did I see? Did I see that Oregon is considered a swing state or battleground state? What the?
Only technically.
Oh, okay.
It's going to go blue. It's considered a battleground state because it's not up by double digits because of the eastern side of the state is very conservative.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. But not really, right?
The western side always swamps it. We breathe faster.
You mean your lips don't move and you don't need a finger?
More or less. But, it's just the people in Oregon, all you have to do, in fact, you have even less of an excuse because if you don't, I'll tell you, I used to work on the campaign before I got laid up. Here's how it will work if you want it to. If you go up on BarackObama.com, and go to the state and find your state office near you. I call them up and say, hey, I can't get my ballot to the local office. I'm laid up or I don't have time or whatever. They'll come pick it up.
Oh, there is every means of getting a vote.
You don't have an excuse.
Fresh out.
If you're in Oregon.
Fresh out.
Yeah, you just got one. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you've done your part. And, of course, you work down in the Obama office as well. You dialed. You made phone calls. I can't help thinking, all the hard work has to pay off. There has to be a payoff for all of this.
Well, I can tell you right now what they're doing down in these various offices all over Oregon. They're making phone calls to all the people who have been marked as all the voters who have been marked as either Democrats or people who are for Obama. And what they're doing is they're calling them up and they're asking them one of several questions. Have you gotten your ballot? If you have you voted? If you have, great, wonderful. Thank you. You have a nice day. If you haven't, would you like, why not? And do you require any assistance?
Yeah.
They'll come down and pick it up and give you a receipt for it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
The only thing they will not, won't do is when it was, there was still time before it, was give you a stamp, because that's considered vote buying. Believe it or not.
Mighty cheap.
A stamp has value, therefore it's considered vote buying. But they would, pick it up, take it down, and put it in the registrar's office.
I'll be darned.
They will do it for you.
Well, so what is your prognosis?
6 weeks in a cast, and then X-rays, and then if I'm lucky, I get put in a boot.
Well, I hope you've learned your lesson about these bar brawls.
You want to know what did my foot in?
Oh, I know it. You know, you heard some right winger talking about how Sarah Palin was a great and godly American, and you tried to put your foot all the way up there. Well, don't do that anymore.
Right. Yeah, these bar brawls are a real pit. I lean forward. I've got a wheeled office chair up next in front of my computer, and I leaned forward one night to switch off my modem. And the wheels shot backwards, and the chair flipped with me in it, and,
now quit that, because that's the kind of crap that I do.
Sorry, I did it. My entire weight came down on my right foot.
Ouch.
Just call me Grace.
Yeah, well, I think it's all made up. We know how it happened.
Yeah, I know. It was a bar brawl. I got to lay off those Boilermakers. I really do.
Lord. Yeah, well, you're more hardcore than I thought it was just tequila shooters or something, but yeah. Tried to warn you.
Well, hey, if you're going to drink, do it good.
Oh, mercy. Well, get better. I mean, have you got something to take care of the pain or anything, or you just keeping elevated or what?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing both. I'm down here on the couch. My only problem is I'm being inflicted with the mainstream media.
Oh, God. And you don't have the little swirly things in your eyes yet? CNN, CNN, oh, Jesus, that's just got to be awful.
Yes, it's bad. It's real bad.
The for-profit-only crowd?
Yeah. I fully expect when I finally get back up on the computer, I'm going to find out all sorts of stuff. Boy, I didn't hear that.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, Susan, take care of yourself, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you very, very soon. And, of course, you know, we've got the election night coverage, so we'll need an Oregon update.
Yeah, well, I will endeavor to work on it. I've got this phone that my husband booted up, went upstairs and booted up the computer, so I can call through the computer because the phone is downstairs. It's a weird hookup. It's through Skype.
My head's hurting.
But it really works. It You know, if I can manage it, I'll do it. But I'll be stuck down here downstairs watching the mainstream media.
Oh, email rolling in from our pal Marty. Subject line, note to Susan, don't do that.
Don't do that. Okay.
Doctor, it hurts when I do this. Yeah, well, don't do that.
Tell him I'll stop.
Okay,
I'll stop.
We'll do. Susan, take care, dear.
Okay, you have a nice night.
Okay, bye-bye.
And message to our friend, Lady Bless.
I'm sure the message goes through. Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And if, you know, it was always, Clyde popped into the chat room, too, from time to time. And his handle was ClydeWD40. And I know he is very much missed there as well. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm glad to hear from Susan because, you know, I've been meaning to ask about her and because I hadn't heard her in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I call, I can't think of everything. You know, I just...
Well, look, I know the feeling. The minute I shut off the microphone after 3 hours, I go, but I meant to.
Yeah.
And then by the next day, it's all gone.
But I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. I really am.
Well, it's all our loss, you know what I mean? I was trying to this is another reminder. I got to do a better job by way of making notes of what goes into the archives and stuff, cuz there's audio of Clyde Kenny. There's audio of him out there from this show.
Uh-huh.
And I got to figure out a way to try to remember where that was so I can pull it out.
What he called in?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. How long ago was it?
Oh, gosh. It was a good long while back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But,
well, you'll find it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it came as a... It was an ugly little shock. It was an ugly big shock. What am I saying?
I do want to tell you what happened down here is the governor did extend voting hours, and he's also extended it to... Saturday and Sunday.
Well, I tell you what, there's a little bit of a firestorm brewing in Hillsborough, isn't there?
About what?
The chairman of the Hillsborough GOP, Juanita.
I'll have to think if I heard it.
Well, maybe you didn't. I mean, this is a story out of the St. Pete Times.
Uh-huh.
Let me see if I can get going. Yeah, here we go. It was on the laptop instead of the main computer here, so I had to sort of wrangle things around. What the St. Petersburg Times is reporting is just days before Americans vote in an election with the first black presidential nominee, the head of the Hillsborough County, Florida Republican Party sent an email warning members of the threat, quote, the threat, unquote, of threat of, quote, carloads of black Obama supporters coming from the inner city to cast their votes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it went out Wednesday.
Wow. Well, I knew that the Republicans were mad about him extending the hours, but they still have long lines. And yesterday, the last I heard count I heard was 2 million people here in Florida. I think it said 1 out of 7 people.
Oh, I think there's going to be a lot of people voting on the regular day, and there's still a potential for a heck of a mess. Just to let you know what this guy went on and said,
okay.
Yeah, his email, and again, this is the chairman of the Hillsborough County Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
Must be a classy guy. His name's his name is Ron Whitley. And in one place they say that he's a volunteer, but in other places it says the head of the Hillsborough County Republican Party sent it out. But the subject line says, the threat. And then the part of the email reads, I see carloads of black Obama supporters coming from the inner city to cast their votes for Obama. This is their chance to get a black president, and they seem to care little that he is at minimum socialist, probably Marxist in his core beliefs. After all, he's black.
no experience or accomplishments, but he's black.
He wrote that in on organizational paper or something?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
It ain't just every day I get a wow out of Juanita, you know?
But, and another thing I wanted to tell you was, like, I heard on the news one day, I mean, you know, he's down here in Florida quite a bit, Obama is, and they said on the news yesterday, I believe it was, or the day before yesterday, that, like, he had just jam-packed, you know, people in there jam-packed to see him, and they asked the question about how many of you have already voted, and according to the station, they said that they would guess 80% of the people there had already voted.
Mercy. Well, and I didn't realize, see, this is one of those little Florida geography lessons. I think we talked about this, Juanita. It's Hillsborough County that erected that giant flagpole with the giant Confederate flag on it.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know,
got a lot of them over here, too, of those sorts in Central Florida, a whole lot of them.
I do love this one statement. The Republican Party just backpedaling for all they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
He says the Republican, here it is. I believe in a strong and diverse Republican Party. Of course, you know what diversity means in the Republican Party, right, Juanita? That means that they're diverse in that they have white women, white men, white little girls, white little boys, and white old people.
And in secret, they date blacks.
Well, Republicans, what they do in secret, I don't think we could even say on this program.
Right.
But we've got the news stories to back it up, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, I'll tell you, it's a trip. Yeah, we've got a lot of those people from the, what they call, some people call South Alabama.
Redneck
the Panhandle.
The Panhandle, the Redneck Riviera.
Yeah. You know, we're, who's the guy that's got the show on TV?
Oh, Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, that's where he's from.
Yeah, what was his aide's name? Lori Klausutis?
The one that died in
the one that was found mysteriously dead in the office.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the name.
Yeah, and suddenly he wasn't interested in running for office anymore.
Oh, he quit. You know, he'd been reelected, and he quit.
Yeah, he walked away.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, wouldn't want an investigation or anything. But, you
know. And now he's got his nerve to be on TV.
Right, because shame is not a Republican value.
Yeah. I'd tell you about The View today. They were dressed up like presidents.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Barbara Walters was dressed up like George Washington.
Okay.
And she was pretty good.
I can't wait to hear who Elizabeth was dressed up as.
Uh-huh. And then...
If she was Abraham Lincoln, I'm going to eat my computer.
No, Cher was Abraham Lincoln.
Okay, feeling better now.
And Whoopi was... she called herself Whoop DDR.
Yeah.
And she ate some candied corn and got out of the wheelchair. It was, you know, a miracle day. Anyway, then Joy was dressed like Teddy Roosevelt, and you want to guess who Elizabeth was?
Okay, Jefferson?
Nope.
Not Lincoln. Reagan.
Yep. You got it.
Okay. It took me. It only took. I got it in three.
And
well, it's only fitting because she's an idiot.
And they had a guest first lady, ex first lady on there. Do you know who it could be?
Rosalind.
Nope.
Not Nancy.
Somebody you don't like.
Oh, that hateful old pearl clutching beast.
Yeah.
Barbara.
Uh huh.
There.
Guess who her alternate ego was?
Who?
Somebody that's got a crazy TV show.
Crazy TV show.
In other words, they were. It wasn't the real barber.
Oh, I see. Was it Ellen? No.
No.
Crazy.
It was a he. He's actually a liberal.
Wasn't Colbert, John Stewart? No. Olbermann? No. Okay, I'm stumped.
He's got a. He was on Air America for a while, and he's got this.
Oh, Al Franken. No.
No. He's got this show that's been on for years and years.
Springer.
Yep.
There we go. Okay.
He made a really good barber.
You give me way too many chances. Oh, God. I can imagine what kind of a. Oh, Barbara. Oh, my God. There's got to be photos.
That was pretty good. But maybe they'll have it on the YouTube or something. But they were talking about, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, they were talking about Obama being on TV. And it was so boring. Guess who said that?
Oh, that's the thing. You can't tell if she's using her own brain or Reagan's because they're equally stupid.
I think it was yesterday she said they were talking about. I love that. Did you get to see it?
Yeah, I watched it afterward.
Did you? Uh-huh. I thought it was great.
I thought it was brilliantly done, and the most fascinating thing about it was that he managed to do 30 minutes without ever mentioning my opponent or John McCain. He completely ignored him.
Well, did you know the same one that did Gore's movie was the one that produced this one?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Well, that probably explains a lot of the quality.
Yeah. It was surprising to me how it was. It wasn't boring, you know, because it wasn't just a speech, which I know he's a great speaker, but, you know, even great speakers sometimes can be boring.
Oh, shoot, you know, yeah. Well, anybody who remembers Bill Clinton's speech at the Democratic National Convention in 1988 that went on and on and on. And he finally said, and in closing, and the audience applauded. Yeah, anybody can give a bad speech.
You know, I wonder now if that wasn't on purpose because it got him a lot of publicity. He went on Jay Leno's show or whoever was on there then, and he was just real humorous about it. It was a pretty good way to get his name out.
Well, it wouldn't be. I mean, it wouldn't. But see, that slot gets reserved for one. You know, someone that the party determines to be sort of the next leading light.
Yeah.
And you know, I think back, and I wonder if Brian Schweitzer from Montana. I wonder if he's the next one. You remember his speech? Remember his speech at the convention?
Yeah. I like him. Yeah, he was good. That's what we need, you know. And I think. Warner was a letdown on his.
Oh, he was yeah.
Yeah, he was disappointing. But anyway, the.
No, I mean, you know, he's a brilliant man, but yeah, I kind of share your yeah.
It just didn't work or something. You know, that's just the way it goes sometimes.
Exactly.
But you know, I just love when. Kennedy was the president. He was so great. He was such a great speaker, and he had the greatest sense of humor. Reminded me of a lot of my dad's. You know, it was just unique. And then after he died, I could hardly listen to Johnson. It was just such a letdown. He reminded me of a Baptist preacher,
which is not a good thing.
No, not the kind that I was thinking about. But I think back, he probably made some really good speeches, but I just couldn't. All friends, I come to you burdened with a heavy heart. And I found
you do that way myself. You do that way too well.
I know. Well, I got a lot going for me to talk like that. You know what I'm saying?
My friends.
He would say that I come to you with burdened with a heavy heart and that, oh, no. Oh, gee.
Well, you know, the other day, I guess it was John Stewart, I saw the clip where he was complaining about it's unfair because Barack Obama is going to – no, it was Bill Maher. It was Bill Maher complaining that Barack Obama would put comedians out of business.
Oh, yeah.
Because there wasn't anything – there really wasn't anything about him to make fun of.
Yeah.
And it reminded me – and for the life of me, I can't remember the name, and somebody will tell me in the chat room. I can't remember the name of that comedian who made that brilliant comedy album of the Kennedys during –
Vaughn something.
Vaughn Meter.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
that was the end of his career.
Yeah, it kind of was. But it was – oh, what brilliant satire it was. It wasn't mean-spirited.
No, uh-uh. It was different, you know. There wasn't a lot of that you heard, too, you know. And it just really was striking, I thought, to hear. But I had one more thing to say, and I forgot what it was. Oh, well.
Not to worry.
Oh, I sent you a link to YouTube
uh-huh.
that I think you'll get a kick out of about Sarah Palin. The man's playing the piano. They sound like they're professionals or something, but, you know, like in classical.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got words to Don't Weep for Me, Argentina.
Oh, God.
And it's saying something like, Don't Talk for Me, Sarah Palin. it's really deep, the words they have and all to it.
Okay, well, I'll keep it. When did you send that?
Today.
Did you?
Not too long before the show. Maybe
okay.
an hour before the show or something.
Okay. I'm looking here. It may not have come in yet. Because I can spot your email and for some reason I don't think it got here. Darndest thing.
You didn't get it?
I don't think so. Cause now you okay. you do know we played uh-huh. your musical debut last night, right?
Yeah.
That was wonderful. That was wonderful.
If the person who sent it, if he'd had a chance to, he would have made a big production out of it. It had all kind of sound effects on it.
I think it stood pretty well on its own, Juanita.
No good. You can see my voice ain't what it used to be.
You know what? But you got a nice set of pipes.
Thank you. I used to sing and
did you really?
A lot of my voice, yeah.
What sort of stuff?
Well, my best, I would sing anything, but my best was ballads from like the 40s and 50s.
Oh, really?
Old ballads.
Yeah.
Probably 30s and 40s. I used to memorize everything, but I sang at weddings, and I sang at church, and I sang with a country band sometime, and but anyway.
Well, it was a darn good lyric too.
Well, thank you.
Well, I tell you,
you know what I was thinking about writing something about Sarah Palin to the tune of Greensleeves. No, not about her, about Clean Cole.
Oh, really?
To the tune of Greensleeves.
Well, that it kind of works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We were, Benji and Nick were here last night, and we were just sort of sitting around banging around ideas. And I think, you know, everybody on this network just loathes that Lee Greenwood thing, God Bless the USA.
Yeah.
We may have
the background of the man that wrote it too.
Yeah, but we may have something sort of bubbling along on that in the way of clean coal and so forth.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the more we can get that out, the better it'll be. I see Buzzflash has got something. Let's start talking about clean coal.
It's catching on. It really, really is.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I hope it catches on big time because we need to do something about it. This is not right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful weekend, and keep an eye on things on Tuesday, and we'll be looking to hear from you. And,
well, I'm hoping I can listen to it. I got to go to the heart doctor on Tuesday because I got something screwed with my heart. It's beating too fast, but I've got low blood pressure, way low blood pressure. So they had to work me in next Tuesday. I couldn't get a place to go in to see him. So I'm hoping. I said, I don't want to be spoiled on listening to my returns, you know, because I'm planning on listening.
Yeah,
to
tell them to get you in there and get you out of there.
Yeah, I'm hoping I don't have to go to the hospital.
We'll be thinking of you, Juanita.
Then I probably have to fight with somebody to watch the TV there for what I want to watch it for.
Yeah, because you know it'll be on Fox.
Yeah.
I mean,
I would watch it on C-SPAN up there. The hospital at least does have pretty good amount of, they've got cable.
Yeah. But, I mean, it seems like every doctor's office I walk into, the darn thing's on Fox.
Maybe they're all...
Yeah, it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy.
Or maybe there are people in the office are like that.
Well, I think that's what it is.
Because
you're
turn it.
Yeah, but your average Fox watcher is a hardcore ideologue. You know, Rick Goodner was the first one to really identify that fact when he wrote, what was it called, the Fox Syndrome, Shared Psychotic Disorder?
I don't know if I heard that one.
Yeah, Rick wrote that several years ago, and we discussed it on the air way, way, way
mm-hmm.
back. He identified a psychiatric disease that afflicts Fox watchers. So that may be exactly what we're talking about.
Maybe.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll talk to you soon, Juanita.
Okay, and you take care.
Will do. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. I've been thinking around in terms of music and stuff, and frankly, I don't fully know what kind of music Kenny loved. So I may make some terrible choices. So I hope you'll forgive me, but this just sort of grabbed me. Go vote. This is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice.
Welcome to Seat Notes. I'm Tony Seaton. There are reports that conservative leaders are planning a confab just 2 days after the election to map their future. This regardless of whether John McCain wins on the 4th. Their intention is to separate themselves from the McCain campaign, which seems a reasoned idea for clear conservatives, but their plan is to have Sarah Palin lead them. What? Reason has flown out the window. This is someone who has dragged the McCain candidacy to defeat. Had he picked Mitt Romney, Rudy Giuliani, or even Fred Thompson, McCain would be neck and neck with Obama, at least. If these conservatives think Palin represents the next step in conservative thought, they need a new thought. She is an anti-intellectual, anti-science, straitjacket moralist who defies the foundation tenets of freedom in our Constitution with every fiber in her being. She has been such a pit bull, the McCain people have lost control of her. Her vitriol and vituperation have even visibly distressed the top of the ticket. And Alaskans are expressing their disapproval of their governor in considerable numbers. Some thoughtful commentators, ones counted on for lockstep support of everything Republican, have complained of the sordid campaign in general and the choice of Palin in particular. Instead of being praised for their integrity, they have received withering criticism from the wingnuts who have brought the Republican Party to an historic low. I confess to a feeling that they deserve a taste of the ugliness. But what's a thoughtful conservative to do if the party is taken over by the depraved cast of a Diane Arbus album? Perhaps they will think it's time to roost elsewhere. No, not go with the Democrats. Maybe form a new party. And that's Seat Notes. For more, go to SETONNOTES.com. I'm Tony Seaton.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Hour number two begins here. It's a tough night, but you know what? I take Dookie and Wally at their word, and I will try to refrain from too much valedictory weeping and wailing for our pal Kenny. With that in mind, a note has just rolled in, and I'm going right to the phones in just a second, but we got a note in as we went to the break. Our pal Kate has chimed in, And she says, what I would say is, would you please find out what Clyde's favorite food was? It's a tradition with me to celebrate the passing of a loved one by having their favorite food and telling stories. I don't have any stories that are my own, but I'd love to have a quiet celebration down here in Dixie. Maybe the Horn family could all share the same thing on the same day. Never underestimate those cosmic connections. Love to all, Kate. And with that in mind, let's go to the phones. I am told that her real name is Amy, but I know her as Mrs. Wally from WD40.com is on the phone. Hey, Amy.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
You know, it sucks.
Yeah, we've had better days here, let me tell you.
But I'm awfully glad that you took time to call in, and I really appreciate that because Kenny Clyde was beloved of all of us.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We are pretty devastated here. It was a head on car crash, and any consolation, he didn't suffer, which is a good thing. And hey, did I hear a question that they were looking to they wanted to understand Kenny's favorite food?
Yes.
Well, Kenny loved to garden, and he loved anything fresh out of a garden. And one of his specialties that he always brought over to our house when he'd come over here is any kind of homemade salsa.
Oh, we can do that. We can do that.
Some fresh tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers and anything you can possibly find. I know it's late in the year for a garden, but mix it all together with some seasonings and serve it with some chips. I mean, that was one of his all-time favorite meals, and he never showed up without it here at our house.
Was he a spicy guy or a mild guy?
He was a spicy guy.
I knew it.
The hotter burrito. He loved breakfast burritos.
Ah.
You know, and the hotter, the better.
Wonderful. I tell you what, we will have a collective cyber breaking of tortillas together.
Exactly.
In his memory.
Exactly. And his beer, throw a couple of olives in your beer when you drink it. That was another favorite he had.
Okay. Olives in the beer. And, I remember we had an email exchange once upon a time about margaritas or something. I can't remember. He might have said that he wasn't too crazy about them, or that he was. I can't remember if he liked them or if he didn't like them. But
he usually finished up a night with a margarita. So yes, he loves margaritas.
Okay, well, I think we've got a good working buffet menu here. I said to you off the air that I'm sorry for the circumstances, but you know, the under which we meet. But I hope you know, and I hope that Dookie and Wally know that what a treasure they are to us here. And I'm pretty sure that Kenny knew too.
Yeah, Kenny absolutely loved coming on your show. I mean, I know Dookie and Wally didn't make it on as much as Kenny did, but Kenny he always raved about getting on your show and talking. He enjoyed the times there.
Well, you know, one of the things that I said a little bit ago at the top of the show, we had plans to come out for the Denver convention, and they didn't, and through no fault of our own, they fell through. But Kenny and I sat there going back and forth. We'd actually planned to all get together and do the show together from Kansas City the night before we went on into Denver. And it kind of makes me madder than I was before at the fact that people who weren't us made that not possible.
Yeah.
And so it's you know, it's just a tale. It's a reminder for us to cherish everybody and let people know how much they are appreciated and loved and cherished. And I know that much is a truism among y'all, and it is here as well. It's my understanding that the funeral will, you told me the funeral will be Monday and the burial will be Tuesday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll have services in the, well, the WD-40 site will list his a bit. The family has asked us to do that on his behalf.
Okay.
And so all the information will be posted out there. They are still obviously, you know, trying to make final details around that right now. So.
And yeah, this is it's a miserable undertaking for certain.
Yep.
Is there any? I know the guys were quite clear. No flowers. Go vote.
Absolutely.
But you know, condolence cards to the family or anything, because I have a feeling that there are people who will want to. Let his brothers and sister know that how much he was cherished.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll get that information to you, Bob.
Okay.
We just got some phone numbers of his family today. We know that he has a brother and sister in the Kansas City area and a brother up in Iowa, where he's originally from. So we'll get all that information from you when we talk to them over the next couple of days.
Okay, I sure do.
I was able to see his brother this afternoon, and he looks just like his brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those eerie things that you know, his brother walks in and went, oh, that's Kenny's brothers.
Well, you know, we had both shared some notes because he'd lost some weight.
He lost a whole bunch of weight.
And was real, real proud of it. And, you know, that's a completely different look in that photograph that's on the website today. And that merry little arched eyebrow, just, oh.
Mm-hmm. That was Kenny. You know, he was so proud because he kept telling, you know, after the election, they knew they had to morph the WD site into something else, so they were preparing pictures for the next site when they bring that up, you know, right after the election.
Right.
And so he kept saying, I want them pictures. So they brought the camera to the bar the other night. And, you know, and kind of the shame, one of the things we had planned is the three of them were going to reveal their identities for the first time. We were going to get a picture of the three of them together holding a mission accomplished sign. And they didn't get the shot, so I'm not sure what we're going to do.
Well, I was speaking out of school a little bit ago, Amy. The site's going to go on, right?
Oh, the site will go on. They'll rename it. It'll be something other than WD-40 because, you know, W's gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will morph the site into, you know, something different, and that was the plan right after the election is to move it on to.
Well, I'd had a couple of double secret probation notes from Kenny telling me, you know, don't let this out, but here, have a look at it. This is what it's going to be. And it's going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah. So, a lot more interaction with folks. You know, people can set up their own pages and things like that. Yeah, I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit, too.
Okay.
They haven't shown me yet, but they said, yeah, we're going to get you a blog page on there. I get tired of going out there and putting Mrs. Wally comments.
I want a direct.
Yeah, and, you know, here's an interesting thing. You're talking about the DNC convention in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
We have friends that live out in Denver that went to the convention, and they gave us a tie-dye Obama T-shirt. I found out tonight that Kenny has never owned one, always wanted a shirt, and one of our friends was going to buy him a tie-dye shirt. So I don't know whether Wally will give it up, but we're thinking about leaving it, you know, giving it to him and having him buried with the Obama tie-dye shirt, which he's always wanted all his life. So, from the DNC convention that you missed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I loved what Linda said on the site, that if Obama wins, he'll celebrate it with his mom and dad because I know how much they meant to him.
Absolutely.
And that if Obama lost, he wouldn't want to be here anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, if I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you are the designated driver for the wake tonight.
Oh, it'll be up till 2 in the morning, so hey, no problem.
Tell me, how did the guys get together? How did this all happen?
You know, we were talking about that tonight. Obviously, you know, you start you know, commiserating. They used to hang out. Dookie and Wally hung out in a bar. And they used to sit on one end of the bar, and Kenny and their friend Chuck, we lost Chuck 6 weeks ago to cancer, by the way, but Chuck and Kenny always sat together on the other side of the bar. And they all had their seats, and their butts were imprinted in those seats. And one day when Dookie and Wally came in, their seats were occupied, so they had to go to the other end of the bar, you know, and sit next to Kenny and Chuck. Well, Wally and Dookie always made jokes that, you know, who's that guy? Look at those two guys on the end of the bar. They're, you know, he's got to be retarded. Look at him.
And Agnes was talking with me. When she started, I don't mean to interrupt the story, but when she started talking to Kenny, he said, you know, Wally and Dookie think I'm retarded.
Oh, yeah. Because they used to go, you know, Wally used to come home from the bar and say, there's this guy there. I swear to God, he's retarded. Well, then he moved down to the other side of the bar, sat next to him, listened to him talk, and said, this guy is really, really intelligent. They struck up a conversation, and they just moved their bar seats next to him. And, you know, they've been hanging out now for, 10 years. It's probably been 10 years since they first met.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, they started talking politics, and, you know, the year anniversary after Mission Accomplished is when they stood up the WD-40 site. you know, because they said, you know, we're tired of sitting in a bar and complaining about it. Let's go do something.
Those guys blow me away with the stuff they find.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how they, but you know, it's my one stop shopping for show prep.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes I feel guilty, like I'm really not doing my job, because all I got to do is go to WD40.com and, you know, there's the show.
They spend hours and hours looking for material. I'll tell you, okay, so as Mrs. Wally, I am somewhat of a WD40 widow at times, because, you know, I'll get up in the morning, you know, on the weekends, and he'll be lost in the site looking up things for 6 hours on a Saturday, and it's like, okay, you know, honey, mow the lawn.
In a minute, baby.
Yeah, in a minute. I gotta post one more thing.
So. Oh, hey, I got a question coming in from the chat room, Amy. Olives in beer, green or black?
Green.
Green. Okay, I was guessing green, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to presuppose.
Two, to be specific.
Two.
Two green olives in a big tall stein, preferably chilled stein.
Did he have a favorite brand?
Cold.
Yeah. Okay. That's. I would have been surprised if you'd said anything else.
Yeah, it was pretty much cold.
Okay, well, you know, for what it's worth, I'm like I said earlier at the beginning of the show, I'm probably gonna hoist several big ones this evening.
Yeah,
I've been a very good boy for many, many months, and if there's a reason to break the fast, this is it. This is it.
Absolutely.
Because I, you know, there was always something. I don't know. There was something. See, you can. Words are failing me. They really are. But there was something. There was something about Kenny that was, you know, really, I want this guy at my back.
Mm-hmm.
And the you know, drinking stein, drinking glass. You know, I get the idea that he would be perfectly at home with one of those helmets with the horns on the head with a drinking horn. You know.
I've never seen him one, but I could see him do that. he was born an Iowa farm boy, and he's got a lot of good stories, you know, that he had growing up on the farm, and you know, then he moved to into the city, and he's got a lot of good cities. There are stories of him growing, you know, living in the city, and you know, he was just one. He was always laughing. He was always happy. You know, he always saw life very positively.
Well, I felt a certain kinship with him because we're pretty close to the same age, and he would, you know, he got things that I got, and I mean, he had a read on my sense of humor that was just dead on. I was going through my old mail because I'm a real pack rat where email is concerned, and just reading some of his old mails and just sitting there laughing because, you know, he'd be in the middle of his day. And it would, you know, doing his job and everything. And I know he did his job and did it well, but there was always time to, you know, hey Bob, you're gonna wet yourself when you read this, that kind of thing. And those are precious people and people to be cherished.
Yes, absolutely.
So, well, I wish you the best, and tell the boys that we're thinking of them, and we'll all be together in spirit later in the evening.
You know, and if folks can get into your forums and if they're doing anything in Kenny's honor, I'd love to hear about it. I'll go check the forums and see what they're doing. Have them post what they're doing in tribute, and I'm sure that, you know, Wally Dookie and Kenny's entire family will totally appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask you one other thing. I know that Kenny was prone to going over. I could always count on him for a recommendation whenever I posted something over at Democratic Underground. Has anybody told that community yet?
I posted this afternoon.
Okay. Okay. Well,
yeah. You know, and honestly, I don't know whether I posted in the right spot, but you know, I'll verify that with Wally later on. But I did sign on under his name and did post it last night. So, or this afternoon.
Bless your heart. I'm so glad you did. I was tempted to do it myself, but then I thought that it might have been presumptuous, so I thought I would wait.
No. Hey, that's okay. We're none of us are really thinking very clearly right now.
Yeah, goes without
we're
saying.
We're still facing the shock factor a little bit from all of this.
And I don't even like to think about what the family's going to go through, just, you know, settling stuff up. And just tell them that all of us are thinking of them, that our hearts are with them, and that if there is anything that any of us can do, we stand here ready and at the, just ready and willing.
Absolutely. I will pass that along to them.
Amy, take care, dear. And okay. It's wonderful meeting you. Rotten circumstances, like I said.
Yeah. But absolutely.
Let's maybe we'll all forge a little closer friendship out of this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Take care, okay. And thank you again, because I know how painful this is, and thank you for just taking time to do this.
Hey, okay. Hey, thanks, Bob.
Oh, take care. Bye now. We love you all. And so, you know, it's a miserable, painful thing trying to take time to call in and let us know the particulars of Kenny's life and the joys of his existence. Yeah, two olives, and fresh salsa, and as hot as you can stand it. You've got, you know what it is. So, do something, do that in remembrance of him. And know as well that just like Wally and Dookie said, not too much bawling and bawling about, if you don't mind. Let's keep the phones going. Hey, what? Darn it. Okay. Oh. Well, I guess I broke it. Agnes isn't in the studio with me. But she sent something along. Let's just check a couple of emails. Kate says, I'm so all over that. Fresh veggies all over the place down here still. Can I have medium and not hot? Yeah, sure. Kenny'd be fine with that. Big jar of homemade and a mess of corn chips. Set up the day and time on air, and we'll all pig out and laugh and celebrate his life and the lives of our close ones. I tell you what, I'm going to take this decision on myself. We've got the election night coverage coming Tuesday evening. And I'm going to go out on a limb with some unbridled optimism. And I'm going to do. I'm going to garner together whatever kind of fresh vegetables I can find and make a big old pot of salsa. And Agnes will probably be back here with us as well. Maybe Nick and Benji will be here too. But we'll have a big old pile of chips and some fresh homemade salsa. And I'm going to have some official ice-cold beverage chilling on ice. And when the call comes, when they say it's safe for us to know in our hearts that Barack Obama has defeated that tired old beast and his beastly running mate, you're going to hear chips crunching. And that happy sound of a malted beverage opening through this microphone. And that's when we'll do it. So that's another thing for our election night. Have your chips and your salsa. And when we know it's in the clear, the first thing we'll do is we'll toast Kenny for all the hard work he put in trying to help free us, as you all have done, trying to help free us from this 8-year nightmare that has been Bushmerica. We'll go back to the phones here just in a second. Thunderstone from the chat room has written in. She says, so sorry to hear about Kenny. I never met him, not even over the internet, but my heart naturally aches with yours and Agnes's and all of those close and familiar with Kenny. She also says, I meant to thank you for toughing it out yesterday with all that was happening. Great to have Nick and Benji there, too. It was my Earth birthday, and something would have been missing without your presence. My chat buddies were missed. I would not have made mention of my Earth birthday, but the ignorance of the comments expressed regarding relationships formed through the internet have incited my fingers to a tapping. You and Agnes and all of my buddies at the Horn have unconditionally welcomed and embraced me more warmly than those of my blood-born family members still present upon this earth. Every day my heart is saddened with the reality that so many of us choose to be blind to the indisputable factor innate to each one of us, the undeniable fact that we humans are all of one family, the human race. All other subdivisions are merely flawed societal concepts which more often than not serve to bind us with limits and fear to hold us back. At least this is what I see. Thank you, Bob, for going through with the show today and for the horn. Greatly appreciate it. Take care. As always, thoughts, love, and hugs to all with some extra thrown in for Kenny. And that's from Thunderstone. P.S. Happy Halloween for Kenny. More there, there's more there than there are even words on the page. Indeed, indeed. Thank you, Thunderstone. Thank you. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciated Thunderstone's piece there. What a great name, too, Thunderstone. I love that.
I do, too. That's really neat. Kind of expresses a lot of the power that may very well be innate in all of us. And as she notes, only if we will seek to find it.
Yep. Actually, the Quakers talk about how we all have a light inside of us. And the Buddhists likewise talk about...
That's very true.
Yeah. I think all the great traditions do, actually, at some point or another.
Well, consider the old spiritual, this little light of mine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that goes back to New Testament stuff with, what is it? Don't hide your light under a bushel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an acknowledgement that we have a light if only we will put it out there to be seen.
Yep.
And it's really interesting. That's a nice door opening there, Preston, because all these cultures that speak of light, we're dealing with a reality with which we are virtually utterly unfamiliar. The closest we get to it is when somebody whacks a power pole and the lights go out for a little while, especially in the dark.
Yeah.
Light is precious and not to be taken for granted. And thus the equation of what is good in human beings with the concept of the saving light, because it goes back to the very essence, our very formative years as human beings, when we were not safe in the darkness, because there were things that would attack us and eat us that could see in the dark and we couldn't, and the only thing that would hold that back was the light that we could make. Wow.
Yeah.
Sermonette is now over. Sorry about that. I don't know where that came from.
No, it's great. And the light we use for cooking our food and, you know, the lights up above that we used to develop, to help us travel, follow the North Star. Three wise men did that, and the slaves escaping on the Underground Railroad followed the North Star to freedom. Sailors, navigators using the stars and mythology coming out of the stars and, these little lights in the infinite darkness of space. But, you know, science, it's not just the religious traditions. It's science is saying we're connected, physics. Einstein has this great quote. I don't remember it exactly, but something along the lines of seeing ourselves as separate beings is a sort of optical illusion. We are all connected. And that's the thing about Limbaugh. That's one of the primary deceits of Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these perception managers who are serving the elite. They are trying to convince us that we are separate, and beyond that, we are enemies. You know, enemies with other faiths,
yeah.
Enemies with other countries, enemies with the earth.
And that goes back to these ancient analogies that we still use in our day to day. When we speak of someone being evil, what are they, Preston?
Yeah.
They're a servant of darkness.
Yep. They are behaving in a satanic way. And what a shameful way to go through life. You know, I, I really pity Hannity and Limbaugh at times. I mean, I don't care how much money you're getting. This is poverty of the soul. And, yeah.
Well, the millions certainly didn't keep Limbaugh from going out and getting himself a junk Jones just to try to get through the day doing what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, these things, you know, there are myriad tales of addiction and demise inside the creative world, for instance. You know, you think of Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, yep. Janis Joplin,
Kurt Cobain,
Smashing Pumpkins?
I don't remember. That.
Maybe I'm getting confused here. But and people who had it and recovered from it, people like Johnny Winter, people like Miles Davis, and those are all in a way they're very different for me. At least I can rationalize a difference in that kind of addiction. Though sometimes it leads to a bitter end.
They left a beautiful legacy, though. They pushed the envelopes. You know, they flew real close to the sun. But they left a beautiful legacy.
Exactly.
And Joplin and Hendrix. And they live on, too. They also demonstrate the, you know, life is short in many ways, and in other ways it's eternal. And Bob Marley is actually selling more CDs now than he did when he was alive.
Yep. The
spirit continues. There are people leaving ugly legacies behind. Rush Limbaugh certainly will be among them. Joseph Goebbels, another. You know, and Goebbels learned a lot of his techniques of manipulation through a guy named Bertrand Russell, who was a pioneer of the U.S. public relations industry. He wrote a book called Propaganda. And some of his achievements in manipulating people were, for instance, getting...
Is this the same Bertrand Russell that was the noted...
Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. Thank you for catching that.
Okay, because I was a little confused for a minute, Preston.
Thank you. Bertrand Russell's the man. He's a great thinker, actually. I meant to say Edward Bernays.
Okay.
Edward Bernays, who happened to be actually a nephew of Sigmund Freud's. So he thought a lot about how the mind works and, you know, how we can be poked in certain spots of our psyches and driven in sometimes unhealthy directions. And Edward Bernays, one of his achievements as a PR agent was getting hundreds of thousands of women to take up cigarette smoking. There's a recent book out now called something like Stopping the Cigarette Holocaust. And I'm not completely denigrating smoking. And I think tobacco use has a long and, in some context, healthy uses. But these cigarettes that we've produced...
Oh, no. Yeah, please.
You know,
yeah, because there's, I mean, I know. I mean, I, this is this is for me empirical data. What I set fire to in the form of a cigarette is a radically different thing from, say, a hand rolled
organic.
Yeah.
I mean, we're putting dozens and dozens of chemicals in these things.
For instance, one of the things that I don't know if it's true. It may just be anecdotal. But I'm told that one of the things that separates Cuban tobacco from that grown in Central America, I mean, you know, they grow the tobacco from Cuban seed, blah, blah, blah. They try to find the nearest soil, yada, yada, yada. But lithium is a mineral. And there is a lithium content to the soil in Cuba so that you get something off of a Cuban cigar that you don't get off of one from the Dominican Republic or one from Haiti or the Honduras or Nicaragua or anywhere else.
Interesting.
I don't know that to be true, but I have read it in the past, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and one other comment on the modern cigarette. I noticed a story in the Washington Post 2, maybe 3 years ago about how Philip Morris, in addition to the chemicals they put in there, they had been spiking the nicotine levels.
Oh, I can tell you. Yeah, I don't need a lot of experiments. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a big difference between the cigarettes that were smoked in my grandfather's day and what are sold now. because, A, they're designed to burn up faster in the ashtray, so you got to monkey with the tobacco somehow to do that. And, B, the fact that there's lights and ultralights and full flavor and yada, 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 they have to manipulate the tobacco to get the nicotine content. So what basically happens in these plants is they take the leaves, they dry them, they cure them, they shred them, and then they apply all these chemicals to them, and they turn it into this sort of toxic tobacco goo, and they make a sort of a paper out of it. And then they crumble it. And the crumbles are based upon the chemical composition are what are made into cigarettes. And that's why I'm the junkie that I am, Preston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that dynamic, I mean, that's it's drug pushing. And
yes, it is.
Look at how we treat that versus we treat people who use cocaine and then people who sell crack. Again, they can be very destructive things to partake in, but still, why the difference in the judicial system and in the economic system as to how they're treated? One is a corporate drug, and so it gets state sanction, and they can even market the stuff. The other, it does not contribute to the profits of Philip Morris. So criminalize it, and skim the profits off it where you can.
Well, even something like cocaine, Preston, it's another example of basically the same process that was applied to tobacco, in that I think we've even talked about this before. You can chomp on those leaves all day long, especially at that altitude, and it will render you a salutary and not a pejorative effect.
Yep.
On the other hand, if you grind up the leaves and you start pouring kerosene and gasoline and all manner of noxious garbage on them, then you can bust out the alkaloids and so forth, and you've got something that is profoundly destructive.
Yeah, DuPont and Dow Chemical have been making a fortune on that trade, cocaine trade for sure. But a lot to think about. I didn't want to leave Edward Bernays entirely, though.
Yeah, sure.
Because we could go further down that field for sure, but. Before I forget, this PR agent, so he did things, you know, regarding women's fashions and stuff like that, and would often have the models with a cigarette in their hand. He'd set up stuff like that and put that in the public consciousness, the public mind. And he also did work for United Fruit in Central America, in Guatemala specifically.
You know, some of this reminds me of that line from Casablanca, you know, round up the usual suspects. When you start talking about some of these things, sooner or later, the same names come back into currency.
Mm-hmm.
United Fruit, the advertising marketing industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the manipulation of the human being away from what is actually desirable or an actual need toward that which is not.
Yeah. And, and then another thing they do is to try to convince us that, well, that's just the way of the world. That's the way it has to be. And look at our history. And they direct us towards a particular kind of history. But, there's so many moments of human cooperation. And, this book I'm reading called The Human Potential for Peace, An Anthropological Challenge to Assumptions About War and Violence. And even as kind of crazy as this world can be with all these weapons that we're selling around the world, still, if you travel, you know, it's largely peaceful. I'm amazed at the generosity of spirit when I travel around the world and I don't know the language and, they're desperately poor people who are wondering if their children are going to eat, and they see someone like me and, I have privilege, and they, The numbers of people who are helpful towards me, just it really lifts my spirits.
And what I think you're reflecting on that theme that we opened, and that is the recognition. If you look at the earliest holy books out of the harshest places, i.e., if you look at the Old Testament, and if you look at the Quran, because those are harsh environments, you find the requisite of hospitality is the first commandment. Insofar as you do not do ill to a guest, You do not ill-treat a guest. You do not refuse aid to a guest.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the essential linchpin of their ability to go on and continue as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see that reflected. You see that reflected in the peoples that you just mentioned.
I mean, this is real security. I mean, the right wing's always going on and on and on and on about security issues. They're not creating security for us. You know, they've come to define security as meaning weaponry, both on a international foreign policy scale and a personal scale, very much. And again, I'm not completely knocking.
No.
Gun stuff.
No. I don't think that you are, because obviously you're enlightened enough to recognize the difference, for instance, between a pistol in downtown anywhere and having a handy 12 gauge out in the middle of nowhere on the family 40 acres. In one instance, it's a tool; in the other, it's a weapon.
Yeah. In so many cases, it's a tool, it's a threatening tool. You know, people, you know, possessive men can get a hold of one and keep reminding his wife or his girlfriend that
you don't want to leave.
Yeah.
You ain't going anywhere.
Yep. But again, guns as security constantly being planted in our heads. All these movies we have. I mean, if you took a look at the movies being advertised in your paper today, I can almost guarantee you, there's probably a 90% chance, I'd say, that there's an advertisement for a movie, and it's a hunky guy, and he has a gun in one hand, and he has a woman's hand in the other. And it's so reminiscent of that other image we had put in our heads before. You remember the caveman? He had a club in one hand and was dragging a woman
by her hair in the other. Yep.
And I think that's...
But we know more, and for those of us who bother to learn the science or learn the data, we know that's a caricature that rises almost to the level of pornography.
Exactly, it is a caricature, and in the same way, say particular groups get caricatured, like the Nazis caricatured the Jews, and here in this country we caricature African Americans, and you know, there's that kind of racial caricaturing going on. Other sorts of caricatures going on, but also a larger, more general caricature of the human race, of our race.
Consider the caricature created in Stanley Kubrick's 2001. The implication was clear, the comparison was clear, when he had those proto-humans, those ape-like animals, dancing around the monolith with the bone in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
That's the characterization of human beings as first and foremost bloody-minded animals.
Right. And again, it also comes down to a question, even if we accept that caricature, which I don't, but if we did, there's also the issue of if we believe in evolution, you know, that we can move on. Other people are trying to tell us, no, you can't do that. This is how we are. This is how we've always been. This is how we're always going to be. Short, nasty, and brutish. But it's usually the people saying this who are the short, nasty, and brutish ones. And other people don't have that same ugly spirit. I mean, we all fail and lose our faith at times, and for sure. But, you know, again and again, we can get lifted up in so many ways through art, through Jimi Hendrix, through Bertrand Russell, philosophers like that.
Well, it's interesting, Preston, that you raise the issue of the evolutionary direction of human beings. I got a fascinating Reuters article here that News Ninja Gene sent along a couple of nights ago that I just sort of held on to because I knew it would come in handy. Because, okay. You know, you or someone like you was always opening these doors, and that's what makes this program so special. Dateline out of Canberra, Australia. The Internet is not just changing the way people live, but altering the way our brains work, with a neuroscientist arguing this is an evolutionary change which will put the tech-savvy at the top of the new social order. And, you know, that's not an irrational hypothesis to posit, because throughout history, and we have a much better example of it in terms of the archaeological record, the people who came up with the next innovation in stone tools, from, say, the Aeschylean hand axe up toward the Clovis point, those were more successful members of the species. That doesn't necessarily presuppose violence, but it shows the greater use of technology. But this guy Gary Small, who's a new neuroscientist at UCLA, he's a brain function specialist, and I'll bet I've got a friend who knows who this guy is. Is engaged in studies that show internet searching and text messaging has made brains more adept at filtering information and making snap decisions.
Huh. Interesting.
So, maybe we're on the way to that Star Trek version of the human being.
Yeah, I think some video games. I'm a critic of a lot of video games, but I think there are some that are helpful and that are evolving, evoking a particular kind of thinking that can be useful. There's some really interesting things going on, some cooperative endeavors.
Well, this is all laid out in a book called iBrain, Surviving the Technological Alteration of the Modern Mind. And okay. what he says is that the direction that he points toward is that the human species will take advantage of these changes, and then the ones who are most successful will be the ones who can merge that technological function with what we colloquially refer to as people skills.
Okay. Yeah. And is he largely optimistic or pessimistic?
No, it seems that he's optimistic. He says that we're seeing an evolutionary change. The people in the next generation who are really going to have the edge are the ones who master the technological skills and also face-to-face skills. They will know when the best response to an email or instant message is to talk rather than sit and continue to email. And, you know, Lord, how many things can you subset underneath that? When to shoot and when to talk, or when to engage, when to disengage. You see what
I'm saying,
and you know, the face to face skills, because that, you know, that's the downside of what you see on the internet. That old gag. What's the best part of winning an argument on the internet? Well, you won an argument on the internet. What's the worst part of winning an argument on the internet? Well, you won an argument on the internet. So what that points toward is that ultimately, even though we have these wonderful communication strategies, if we do not attempt to get beyond them and behind them and find out the humanity that motivates it, then it's for naught. And that's one of the things that I've been talking about this evening in terms of, the relationships that we establish via the internet. That they can be every bit as precious as a relationship established at close quarters.
Yeah.
But only if we do the extra work of making the person on the other end of the series of tubes real.
Well, ideally, I think that would be the result. But I know, though, I have friends who I'll never see face to face, but I certainly cherish them even short of that sort of meeting. People in faraway lands that we're not able to, it's a long, expensive journey oftentimes, so probably just isn't going to happen. But yeah, I know what you mean. Face-to-face stuff matters for sure. And, it's interesting dynamic. And putting a face on, people in other parts of the world, again, the indoctrination we get, we kind of forget people outside our border, and we're number one anyway, so who really cares? We're so superior. they're all just trying to come here and take advantage of our greatness. But we never, again, the context, why are they leaving their country? Why are they losing their jobs in their countries? We don't look at that and our connection to that. Nor do we look at the way in which some of us go to their countries and to find opportunities and to enjoy their cultures and their societies and the freedom we feel there. Certainly there are a lot of people making a lot of money off of places that are called poor, but they're not poor. They've got a lot of natural resources and labor wealth, places like the Congo, you know, which has subsidized a lot of the, you know, kind of well-paid livelihoods of people who sell cell phones, for example. The Congo is one of the few countries in the world with something called coltan, and they've had a ton of that stuff removed, and the money from it is coming here. You know, we're always hearing about the remittances from the migrants back to their home countries, and again, congratulating ourselves for our economy and how we're so generous.
Mm-hmm.
But how often do we give thanks to, say, the Congolese and the resources that they're sending here?
We have very little appreciation for anyone's resources.
Yeah.
Because that's the nature of the consumer culture that has been developed, and that's why from time to time, in fact, last night it was mentioned. And, you know, I've become a little bit of a missionary for this this little brilliant film that's available on the Internet, you know, free for the viewing. You know, it's maybe 10, 20 minutes long, not much of your life, but it's life-changing, which gives it value. And that's the story of Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it lays out, you know, that creating the consumer culture was a very deliberate act, Preston.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only via the consumer culture that we do not that we are numbed, that we are defeated, frankly, in our ability to appreciate the sacrifices that we all make for each other. Because if for instance in the example that you give, if the Congolese people had a fully functioning informed consent sort of decision, whereby they contributed that substance to the good of humanity,
mm-hmm.
then how would we not look toward them and recognize them as the heroes that they are?
Mm-hmm.
How can anybody turn on a light switch, to go, you know, back to my favorite, or not favorite, but the one that's nearest me because it's on top of me, topic, how can anyone turn their lights on in America and not appreciate the sacrifice that Appalachian people who aren't even associated with coal companies make? Because we have it thrust upon us. We sacrifice our homes. We sacrifice our well-being. We sacrifice the very futures of our children, grandchildren, and children yet unborn and undreamt of.
Yep. And I just read an article today on Common Dreams about how the Bush administration is seeking to take down the few remaining regulations on mountaintop removal mining.
The stream buffer zone rule is under attack for good.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bush administration is desperate to somehow or another try to make this permanent before they get out. I mean, they're really, you know, really, Preston, what they're doing is stealing the silverware.
Yeah.
You know, they made all those jokes at the end of the Clinton administration about, and you know, Lord knows the right wing, the Hannitys and the Limbaughs that you mentioned earlier. You know, they picked it up and ran with it as gospel. Well, they took all the W's off the keyboards. Remember that?
Right. Yes, I do.
And it turned out to be a lie. But you know what? These are such low-rent thugs that I wouldn't be surprised if every B and every O is off of every keyboard anywhere in the federal government come January the 20th if he's elected.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's that kind of small-minded pettiness that allows not just that kind of, you know, low-rent, petty, you know, punkish thuggery to take place, but also the high-rent stuff that allows entire cultures to be despoiled and destroyed for nothing more than idle consumerism.
Yep. I mean, they're taking down rainforests of mahogany trees so that the elite can have mahogany dashboards on their luxury Mercedes or whatever.
Okay, now I feel guilty. I've got an acoustic guitar that's got a mahogany body on it.
You know, I think that, you know, a lot of faiths are animists, and they
yes.
feel that you know, everything has a spirit. You know, we were talking about some of the religious traditions earlier, but the kind of indigenous faiths, the animists, some of the shaman, you know, people like that, everything has a spirit. And my guess is that if we accept that, that mahogany tree is probably perfectly happy to be as part of a guitar, you know, to sacrifice itself for, again, something beautiful in the world. Versus
or perhaps even something occasionally on key.
There you go. but the creative process.
But I understand exactly what you're saying. But it's something that cropped up on the program the other night, and that is, I heard it recapped yesterday when I was listening to Diane Rehm have three coal thugs against one person who was opposed, who was trying to debunk clean coal technology. And, you know, you have this obviously well-educated, spent a lifetime at it scientist sitting there talking about, well, you know, we can sequester the carbon and the technologies, and, you know, we might have it in 30 years and we can pump all the carbon dioxide under the carbon and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, because I'm a simpleton, I'm sitting there thinking, why don't you stop? Because we've already got a really effective carbon capture process on the planet, Preston. They're called forests.
Yep, and it's also called conservation and efficiency and walking and riding bicycles and green architecture, right? They keep saying energy demands. They're very careful about planting that. It's semantic infiltration that they do. And if they can call it energy demands, well, it's a demand, so like we're demanding it, so we have to keep.
And yet we used to criticize the Soviet Union because we said they had a command economy.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, you know, you can refuse a command,
mm-hmm.
but if you refuse a demand, you do so at your peril.
Right.
And
right.
The demand, you know, the demand. Is made not upon, you know, it's not you and me making the demand. The demand is made upon the people who live where the resources are being eliminated. Again, you've opened the door to another fascinating article that came to me last night from The Guardian, headline, "World is facing a natural resources crisis worse than financial crunch. Two planets needed by 2030 at this rate," warns report.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hello?
You're right. That's right. And that demand is very much, you know, they're trying to imply that it's a popular will. You know, we're demanding it. The population wants it. Actually, a lot of that demand, again, is being fomented in corporate boardrooms by a very elite group that is creating a demand.
It's fomented in the boardroom, and it's perpetrated in the marketing department. You stink.
Yeah,
Your teeth look funny. Your clothes are out of fashion. Ladies, your heels are the wrong height. Toward the end of last night's program, Kate wrote in when we were talking some about the abuses to which women are particularly subjected to in the culture. And she said, because, you know, women make less money but have to pay more for health insurance, more for this, more for that, more for the other. And she said, we cost more. Aside from the Madison Avenue rape, there's the Viagra and the unwanted pregnancies that are social obligations, the stress of single parenting, low wages, getting ripped off at the car repair place, on and on and on. Of course we cost more. And she said, you men are created equal, but we women cost more.
Where did you find that?
Well, that was just Kate.
Okay.
Yeah, just emailing to me.
All right, on Kate, if you're out there.
The Rolling Stones, for heaven's sakes, reflected on this, and, you know, how many people sat around and Mother's Little Helper?
Yeah.
So she buys a frozen steak and she burns a frozen cake and goes running to the shelter of her mother's little helper. Isn't that about Valium or you know, some sort of tranquilizer?
Yeah, I believe so.
And oddly enough, you know, that raises something with me, because think of I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Think of the lyrics to that. Good God, who knew that the Rolling Stones started off as a consumer advocacy band?
Speaking of lyrics, I've been listening to, Tracy Chapman's latest CD. I think it's called Where You Live. And she has a song. The first song, actually, is called Change. And it could so easily appropriately be like a theme song for what's going on. And certainly the Obama campaign and other movements going on. And she's actually, you know, a lot of people sometimes kind of bemoan or are kind of concerned or reminiscent about, you know, oh, where's all the protest music? You know, we don't have, you know, before we had Jimi Hendrix or Joan Baez, all these movement singers. But we very much have them now, and I think Tracy Chapman is certainly among them. I mean,
oh, absolutely. We have the music now. It's just that as compared to the late 60s, the music business and, the people who foment this garbage in the boardrooms wised up. Hey, we're not going to put that out there. I don't care how many records it sells.
Too threatening for the people who...
That's trouble music.
Own more of the stations, yeah.
And it goes back to the composition of something like the Big Rock Candy Mountain or This Land Is Your Land. That stuff, you know, that's Bolshevism. That's socialism. You know, and the wielders of power just gasp.
Yep.
And you know, one of the things that concerns me as I go on Tuesday, armed with the full knowledge of what I'm doing in the voting booth, I am concerned about the yeehaw factor, or what I call the yeehaw factor. I'm trying to be really optimistic here. When we get Obama elected on Tuesday, Preston, that we just sit back and say, well, everything's okay now, and the ship will turn its bow into the storm, and we'll ride it out, and we'll come to safe haven, and all we have to do is sit here and let the helmsman steer the ship.
Right, and just maybe cheer or something, or you know.
Right, and my inclination is, oh no, row, you bastards.
Right, exactly.
You got to row.
And on the flip side is, if he loses, I fear that people will just be so distraught and depressed and demoralized. I saw a lot of that after Kerry lost.
Oh yeah.
And I honor that. You know, I think that's appropriate, but still need to keep eyes on larger prizes. You know, and you know, we know we keep on and keep on. So many other actions, you know, aside from the act of voting and getting particular people elected, you know, there's just so many actions we do every day, you know, where we spend our money, where we spend our, you know, periodical dollars and media dollars or media diet, you know, what we check out of libraries and on and on and on. That's how we change consciousness, whoever wins or loses Tuesday. And who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I was actually here in Denver. 11,000 people didn't receive their mail-in ballots that they requested, and I was
yes. And then the company, and it was one of the electric voting companies that was supposed to take care of it, lied about it.
Sequoia.
Yeah.
And they're being very vague about how it happened exactly. And I noticed a person in my office, who also lives in my same neighborhood, she also didn't receive hers. And we're in a very liberal part of town. I mean, Denver's liberal and this neighborhood it's very progressive. And, it'd be interesting to see, you know, what were the political leanings of some of those 11,000 people, you know, that kind
yeah,
of,
the other 10,999.
Right. So,
and sadly, this stuff only comes out at the very last minute, and that just urges on my. Let's see, I think Mark Morford coined a new word, not paranoia, my pronoia, that eggs it on to, you know, because how long ago should any issues relating to absentee ballots have been dealt with? And we find it out 5 days ago?
Right. There's actually a great astrology writer named Rob Resney. He did a astrology column called Free Will Astrology, and he has a book called Pronoia.
Okay, so that's where he got it, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, Morford's tuned into that sort of stuff, so yeah.
Okay, well, wherever, it's a very useful thing. I mean, we can be very frozen by our paranoia, and again, I honor those feelings. There are some people coming after us, you know, doing damage. But
well, and that's what I try to remind people, Preston, is that paranoia is defined as the irrational fear that people are out to get you. Emphasis on the word irrational.
Oh, there you go.
Fearing that people are out to get you is not by in and of itself irrational. It's when you have to manufacture the people who are, and the thing is, we got enough people coming after us that we don't need to manufacture nothing.
Right, right. You hear them blowing things up all the time, and definitely. But let's keep in mind the pronoia, you know, the ways in which the world is conspiring to shower us with blessings.
To make stuff better.
Yeah, yeah, in the ways, you know, people have maybe not gone after each other, but found each other, come across each other's paths, and have assisted each other.
It's it's the beautiful accidents. You know, tonight we're celebrating the life of Kenny Bollies, the Clyde from WD40.com, and that's one of those beautiful accidents. There was no way I would ever have come to know him or the wonderful work they do at WD40.com. Except for the fact that way back when I was on the radio and on terrestrial radio, he found me via the streaming that Ben Birch was doing. And then there's the story of me hearing about Ben by listening to Mike. And then there's the story of just the night that I idly punched the scan button in the truck on the way home from work at CNN and heard Mike for the first time. And it's what I said early on. There ain't nothing linear about none of this.
Mm-hmm.
These are the beautiful vibrations of a gossamer web.
A web, exactly. You know, when I was watching Spider-Man, I kind of saw, you know, the web that he was creating, kind of, you know, and trying to stop what, you know, people like the Green Goblin, played by Willem Dafoe, who mm-hmm. was a weapons contractor.
Precisely.
And actually, well, yeah, interesting webs developing. What a interesting web we weave. And
old analogies often serve the best, don't they?
Definitely.
You know, in Shakespeare talking about a tangled web. A tangled web doesn't serve the purpose for which the web is spun. Because it won't transmit the vibrations, and you know that web tangles when we engage in a deceptive lifestyle. Oh, somebody must be burning incense in here to me. What did you do to me tonight, Preston?
Well, I do have some incense burning here.
Well, it's obviously making it through the series of tubes. Very cool.
No doubt.
Well, Preston, I'm gonna run along, okay. But a wonderful weekend to you. And again, thank you for opening all of those doors.
Likewise, and thank you for your previous callers who opened doors for me, and I really appreciated hearing about Kenny's life, and you know, it was really touching, and I appreciate it. And we'll be talking again soon.
Okay, thanks, Preston. Have a Bye-bye. Great weekend. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, the things that you guys bring to the program. You know, this program is 1,000 times better. It's 1,000 times better on the nights when y'all are making the conversation go than when I just sit and fill a bobster. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, let's see. We've got a few things. Like I say, this weekend, everybody keep your eyes open. They're going to throw everything in the world at the, you know, they ain't going to throw the kitchen sink. They're going to throw the kitchen this weekend.
Yeah, never mind the sink. It's already been thrown.
But saw that I sent you that thing. But basically, enough, somebody overturned a rock, and there popped up David Bossie.
It's one rock after another.
Like I said, I'm waiting for Dan Burton to show up with a shotgun.
You know, I realized, you know, we're so far down the rabbit hole. I went to check my email this morning before everything went sideways, and I saw one of these little right-wing things that I get periodically, one of these, hustles for a guest to have on the show, whatever. And now, the right wingers are screaming that, wait for it, this is too good.
Uh-oh.
William Ayers wrote Dreams from My Father for Barack Obama.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I wish I was kidding. Yeah, you know how they determined this?
Huh.
By looking at the words that are in the book.
Too good?
No, just looking at the words. Both books have the word river in them. Both words have the book ship in them. Both books have the word storm in them. And therefore, yeah, it's a classic case of the violation of the old rule about what's the Latin for it? Post hoc ergo propter hoc.
Yeah, but if you're going to say that, we could also say he apparently wrote it for Herman Melville.
There, that's it. Herman Melville wrote Dreams from My Father.
It has something to do with a white whale. We can't figure it out.
And, I mean, these people are gone absolutely bug spray crazy, Luke.
What we're talking about, what I talked about a minute ago, maybe everybody hadn't heard, that David Bossie is behind some group putting out some sort of DVD in papers, newspapers over the weekend.
Over the weekend,
about
yes.
The evil power of Islam.
Well, no, that was...
And Islam or Muslim. And tying it back to Barack Obama. You know, it's just sort of like...
And you know, he did it. Obama did as lovely a job as he possibly could, Luke, the other day when he said, well, you know, the next thing that Senator McCain will be doing is accusing me of being a communist because I shared my toys in kindergarten and a bite of my sandwich.
It's like, you know, Mr. McCain, if you're going to accuse him of socialism, congratulations, you're standing there in the group because didn't you just vote for something that everybody else around here is calling socialism? You know, this thing that you laughingly call a bailout?
Well, and of course, Olbermann did a fabulous job of turning things on their heads in, I guess, his commentary last night when he said that
the thing about William Ayers.
Yeah, now the McCain the ineptitude of the McCain campaign had become was fully out in the open because they're really so silly that they don't even vet their own allegations well enough to realize that the allegations are going to come back and be far worse for Senator McCain.
Oh, as I say, I've watched it a couple times just to see what they were talking about. Turned over one night, watched Hannity, and they were on this thing with this fellow Khalid. Then, amazingly enough, it is amazing how that ties right back into John McCain.
Exactly. Well, you know, Obama's group gave him a grant of $10,000. People. John McCain was the head of the group that gave him nearly $500,000. Anybody? Yeah. Anybody? Bueller?
It's like every time they mention it, apparently Hannity would just pretend like he didn't hear a thing and keep right on talking, which is his style. You know, somebody says something that actually makes sense, well, we have to ignore that and go right on. You know, it's one of these things. It's like, gosh. Well, I sent you the thing from West Palm Beach. We saw that... Our real president was down in there talking tonight.
And rather forcefully at that, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I'll be honest, he wasn't quite as worked up as actually Big Dog was last night. I watched a little bit of that. That was a speech. Bill Clinton.
He was on
the beam. You know, he was in full campaign mode.
In the zone.
Oh, he was. It's like I'm surprised he almost didn't say, re-elect me again, you know. But he was like I said, when he's like I say, on the beam, there ain't no better person at it. I really don't think there is. I haven't seen him.
He's gonna be in Beckley tomorrow morning. If it wasn't for the fact that my kids have to be at a school function take them to.
Somebody locally governed it where you can get something of it, or
I don't know. I would just about bet that Boss Man Wayne will be there. I have no doubt that I will hear the repercussions of it. But I expect him to absolutely open the floodgates and
turn it on.
Yeah, turn it on big time because he's among friendlies here. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Lord knows Beckley's got their fair share of weirdos and right wingers. God knows I used to deal with them every night on terrestrial radio. But
him and Al Gore both had the ability, and I know where Al Gore got it from because he was a seminary student. But every once in a while, they can get to the, what I call the preacher mode.
Well, Al Gore was a seminary student, and Bill Clinton grew up. Not that I'm comparing myself, but the effect is the same with the rhetoric of the Southern Baptist Church.
Oh yeah. And when they get in that zone, they are persuasive, and I mean they can hold their own with anybody. So now I was sitting here while I was talking to you, I had the sound off, and over on the Deuce they were just finishing up Mr. Gore's speech, and I'm sure we'll see something else because like I say it's going to be amazing to see what all that they're going to. I'm just curious to see who all is going to be on the Sunday shows. You know, it's almost like, guys, I would not invite anybody from any of the campaigns. I would just have all your reporters in and just talk about it. You know, get your senior reporters in and just have a discussion. Cause like I say, you're at the point now, I don't want to hear them. I mean, I've already voted, but you know what I mean? It's sort of at the point, guys, you don't need to hear to do it on that show, on the Sunday shows.
Yeah.
Let's just have all the people from around the country come in. You know, have all your reporters talk from all the.
You mean a conversation, kind of like what we do here?
Oh, well, you know how it is. It'd be something new and inventive for them. They can't try it, but you know, it's worth a shot.
You wonder if they can do it without their pontificating hats.
Oh, I saw the other night, and I wish I'd remember what it was. I think it was Campbell Brown's thing, or maybe it was Larry King, and they were doing something. They mentioned something that Palin had said, and David Gergen spit took. Oh, it was just, oh, he really did. I mean, it caught him by surprise.
Did the milk come out his nose?
No, but I mean, if he had been drinking, it would have sprayed the whole room. Because, I mean, he dropped the dry spit took, let's put it that way. You know what I mean? You could tell he got totally hit from the left side, just totally wiped him out for a second. He's like, what?
One of those moments.
You don't get caught by surprise too often.
That's entirely true.
Oh, I tell you, but like I say,
sir, are you just gonna strap in and try to ride downhill till Tuesday? I mean, you're done. You've done your thing. You voted.
Oh, yeah. Well, you saw the thing that, like I say, they've already said that they set in our state. I'm sure in every state they set a new record in early voting, and they were talking about that. To the middle part of the state, that it was running like 50-50, they think, and that sounds like a good thing for us.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tennessee being Tennessee, does that necessarily, I mean, is that...
Because everybody, if you ask them, you know, all the Republicans, they say, oh, we're just totally red. Like, I think, because it'll be interesting to see the numbers on some of these states to see how close it comes. You know what I mean? Who all turns out, because, you know, they were saying, like, I think it was one or two places, they had, like, over 35% African-American turnout. You know, I mean, that's a bigger percentage than there is, you know what I mean, of the general population in some places. You know what I mean? They were talking about some of these numbers. It was like, huh? Oh, well, let's see. I'm going to let you go on, Bud, because I know you got some more people to talk to. And I think here in just a minute, there's put that Bill Maher on over on Campbell Brown's thing. Let's go see what he had.
Oh, he'll probably
be live tonight.
I don't know if poor little Campbell Brown's up to the work there.
There's sometimes she shows flashes of actually getting it, and there's other times you're like, you know, you're just sitting there going,
swing and a miss.
Do you say anything that doesn't come out of that earpiece in your ear? I'm just curious. You know?
Yeah, that's
that it can't be on TV anymore. They're sitting there talking to you.
That's that Albert Brooks moment from Broadcast News where he says, you know, it's amazing. I say it
somebody,
here.
Somebody
and it comes out
there. A lot talking into a microphone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you what, I think who I may end up watching probably this weekend. I think I'm going to switch over to watch a little bit of BBC America and see how they're covering it. That'll be something different.
Hey.
They give you a pretty neutral group.
That might actually be on the square.
Yeah, just for something different. Because like I say, we've heard everything from all the regular pundits, I guess we could say. You know, the ones we see every night if we turn on the CNN or MSNBC or even the fake news channel.
Exactly. Well, Luke, have a great weekend, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you as we. What's the name of it? Waiting to Exhale? Isn't? Yeah, waiting. That's what we're doing.
Uh-huh. Well, you know how it is. We're all just waiting around to see when all the machines start all of a sudden start talking in tongues.
Warning, warning, warning.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger. Oh, God. I'll tell you what, I'll probably wait and see how you're doing Tuesday and give you a call in.
All right, sounds good, Luke. You take care.
Yeah, all righty.
All right, bye now. Oh, I forgot to wish Luke well with his Vols this weekend. You know what I'm going to do? I've received a number of songs that, you know, requests that folks are saying they would like me to play in memory of Kenny. So I think we're going to take a few minutes here and play some of them. Out of deference, I'm going to start with Agnes. Agnes, of course, and if she's actually listening in the other room, she will come in and, you know, skillet head me. But Agnes is one of those people who has a really hard candy exterior and a soft, mushy center. And she's been devastated all day long, just periodically breaking into tears. One of those moments was when she played this song, and she has sent it on to me. We are the electronic household. We're all under the same roof, and we email each other. She sent it on to me. She said, a couple of years ago, Clyde sent along this song to me. I always called Clyde my teddy bear, and he said this was one of his favorites. I only hope he knew how much he was and is loved just for being himself. Amen, Agnes. Amen.
I got both hands on.
Kenny sent that along because, as Agnes noted, she referred to him as her teddy bear. And that band was called the Teddy Bears. It's called Punk Rocker. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. News Ninja Gene is with us. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. As I was saying, in the ultimate conflation of politics and sport, one of the restaurants downtown, the Venetian, I think I've talked about it before, they're actually holding an election party, and they're going to be showing the results on their big screen. I'm going to probably bug out a little bit that night and see it simply because I've got a friend that's working the Art Walk too, so I might call in from there if I can get a chance to
go. That'd be more than cool.
Yeah, and if I can get a chance to see what it looks like, that's the restaurant that I find they're interesting when it comes to dealing with me. But, you know, what the heck? I mean, it struck me. It's kind of odd because you think of voting as, or at least I think of voting as, fairly solemn, quiet practice, and yet they're doing this and they're treating it like a football game. And I thought that was, you know, I don't know. I'm somewhere between how tacky and how fascinating. It's weird. I don't know how to react to it.
it sounds frankly reasonable and rational to me.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yeah. I don't think. Maybe that's the point. Maybe we've over-grimmed voting. If you look back at the history of this country, especially the frontier states early on, I think it was Robert Penn Warren who painted a beautiful picture of a frontier election day. And there was, you know, bands playing and hooting and hollering out on the square and liquor jugs being passed around. And, yeah, okay, maybe some vote buying.
Mm.
We have that. Maybe we have grimmed it up.
Hmm.
An election in a republic based upon principles of democracy, an election should be cause for celebration.
Okay.
Because we are joyously, we hope,
yeah,
engaging in the free exercise of the franchise and facilitating what is essentially a bloodless turnover of power. If you look at the vast majority of the history of humanity, the leading powers of any given nation, state, country, tribe, whatever, seldom gave over power without there being either a death that led to a hereditary succession,
mm-hmm,
or a coup, or someone having their head removed from their shoulders by virtue of a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. I mean, at least conceptually, it represents something celebratory in the advancement of human civilization that we're maybe at a point now where we can do it without killing each other.
Well, I hope so. But I just wanted to call in with that because I've seen it the last few days and they've advertised it on their marquee and that kind of thing. I thought, gee, that's interesting. I didn't ever really go to too many football games at bars, so, you know, and maybe that's why I was kind of, I just never gone to a bar or restaurant to just watch a football game, which is kind of just me, but. You know, I hadn't thought about that. Well, it's probably more just a celebration than anything else. But, you know, it's on. I guess it's going to probably turn out to be okay. And I guess I would assume
that the proprietors must feel like their audience will be pretty well partisan to one side or the other, because, you know, there is the possibility of.
Oh yeah, especially in this town. Yeah, I'm wondering if there'll be anybody. Out for the Art Walk, or whether there'll be anybody, if they'll all be either home or in the Venetian, just looking now, watching the results. Because I like you said previously, I mean, it's like, I'm waiting to exhale. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, you know, even for the people who enjoy doing them, I don't do roller coasters.
Yeah.
But for people who enjoy them, there's still that anticipatory when, you know, when you're in the, and it's going the clackada, 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 being hauled up the hill.
Well, I don't mind going downhill as long as.
As long as there's not a brick wall at the end.
Yeah, that's for doggone sure. Well, I'll let you go so you can get on to other callers, but I just wanted to throw that in.
All right. Well, Gene, thank you very much. A great weekend to you, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you.
Sure. See you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye now. A little note coming in from the chat room that some shots of fine single malt Scots whiskey have been lifted in Clyde's name and in his memory. Thank you. You know what? He'd be tickled to know this stuff. He really, really would. I feel comfortable in saying that. Let's play another tune. John Fox sent this one along. He sent along a song from a band that he puts great stock in. Temple of the Dog, some of whom went on to become Pearl Jam. And he thought that this would be appropriate to the occasion. He just sent it along and said, for Clyde.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just to give you an idea, during the songs I've gone and been wandering through the archives of, oh, dear God, I was just looking here. There's hundreds of emails between Kenny and me. I don't know if you all remember, but I guess it was way back in, this was a year ago. It was a year ago. I got this, we had done this bit where the fundies did this, letter from hell thing. And I got a note from Kenny saying, Bob, you definitely hit one out of the park on your show last night. That spot you played of the kid that went to hell was classic. First he had to stand in line like he was at the supermarket. Then they don't know his name. What was he supposed to do, scan his barcode? Somebody's been watching Idiocracy. Second, at the end, he was pissed because his buddy didn't tell him about Jesus? As if knowing about Jesus is some kind of deep, dark secret that you need to know the secret handshake to become a member? Jeez Louise, are these people whacked or what? A lot of wisdom Kenny brought to the table. Later on in another conversation, when he was talking about, he did this letter regarding cheap Chinese steel and what it meant for working people, because he worked intimately with, he was a welding inspector, and he knew what a bad weld or a bad piece of pipe could do to somebody. And he wrote me this, note because he wanted to get the word out about the dangers of this cheap steel. And I how I am about protecting people's identities, and I wanted to make sure I protected his. And he said, and in regard to the article that he had written, he said, I really want to come clean on this, and to avoid any confusion, use both names if needed. Something like Kenneth Bollies, a.k.a. Clyde from WD-40, or whatever you wish. He said, it's your show, and I just really want people to know what's happening. Conversation went on for a little bit, and he closed with this. He said, money doesn't mean shit to people that have it. That is, until they don't anymore, if you know what I mean. He was a wise, wise man. And the people who knew him well are the most fortunate ones out of this process. They are also the people who will miss him the most. Let's get another song in, if you don't care. Lottie sent this one along, and more than appropriate. I don't know if Kenny knew how much he'd be missed, but damn, he is. Here we go.
Thank you.
You guys have a real ear for this stuff. And I appreciate it. I just pulled up the last email that I got from Kenny. And and he says, it was the one where he was giving me the sneak peek at the new website. And it will be coming after the election, and I think it's going to be really, really cool. And I know how much hard work has gone into it on the part of the guys. So, he says, because you're our favorite liberal radio host, longtime friend of WD-40, and just an all-around good guy, yeah, I'm sucking up. Is it working? Says they wanted to give us a preview. Just ended it. Thanks again, Bob, and we appreciate everything you guys at the Horn do for us. We don't, you know, there is nothing we here at the Horn do for anybody that can begin to compare with all that you do for us and that you do for each other. We have set out to build community, and we have succeeded in some part and to some degree. And if I have not said it clearly enough, I am reminded today to tell each and every one of you that you are precious to us, you are loved, you are treasured, and you are cherished. And please don't ever forget any of that. Please don't. And so we are at the end of tonight's program, and I'm not going to end it like I usually do. A little something different, if you don't mind. Kenny'd probably have a fit and, you know, hey, quit that. But this just seems appropriate. So while you are gone from this world, Kenny, you are not gone from our hearts. And you are remembered. And we'll catch you all on Monday.
I've been doing a lot of thinking about growing older and moving on. No one wants to be told that they're getting on and maybe going away for a long, long stay. But just how long and who knows and how and where. Expanding heaven.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote Tuesday on President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey, who has submitted nearly 200 pages of elaboration on his positions. However, Mukasey has reportedly not given a definitive answer on whether the controversial technique known as waterboarding is torture. Many Democrats have said it is illegal, and they will not vote for him unless he categorically answers the question. The Democratic candidates running for president in 2008 took part in a televised debate last night in Philadelphia. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards took on frontrunner Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. They challenged her candor and consistency. President Bush is trying to take the offensive against Congress in health care policy and other budget issues. He accused Democrats of supporting federalized health care instead of a free market approach that he favors. In Spain, 7 of the 28 people on trial for the 2004 Madrid train bombings were let off entirely, including one suspect who had allegedly bragged that he was the mastermind behind the blasts. However, 21 people were convicted on at least some of the charges. A 25-year-old man pleaded guilty today in connection with an alleged plot to attack soldiers at Fort Dix. He faces up to 5 years in